Okay, today is a very sad day. It's Sunday, November 22nd, 2015, and coming here to Gris for the first time in all the years. I'm teaching at Gris from the day it opened. After all, I'm responsible. I was the Makaba Patish in getting this campus and winding up with a kollel here at Kanayin Hara. So suddenly, as you know, generally from my house, even with a lot of traffic, it's not more than 5 minutes. In the morning, it's 3 minutes. So suddenly the highway, two police cars pull out of Begin, block off the highway, and then three motorcycles pull out with the black police on it, and two police cars, then an ambulance, then a police car, and more motorcycles, and they're heading for Shari Tzedek. So a minute later they wave us on, I got to Gris, I turned on the 3:30 news, and it was the lower lane of another attack in the same area, in the entrance to Har Etzion, and the students just told me after the last class, Rabbi Bednash's class, they went online and the lady, a 17-year-old girl, died. So, died, yeah. So, and I want to dedicate the death. I want to dedicate today's shiur in memory of Ezra Schwartz, who is being buried as we speak, or a little later today. The body was shipped back to Boston. And that's what Moshe Schwartz was referring to. I, Lo Aleinu, am the only survivor of the original faculty of the original school that began to export Torah to the Anglo-Torah world. 1969, BMT, 10 students. And out of those 10 students, tens of thousands of Kamen Aliyah, perhaps over 100,000 students or more have studied here. And it's a good question. How do we ask kids to come here? But then again, when you walk the streets of New York, Cleveland, Detroit, you're also not in the safest places in the world. And even in Melbourne, Australia, which when I was there last was the Gan Eden, today they beat the hell out of Jews coming home from Friday night davening, including someone on the Israeli consul there, or the ambassadorial staff. So unfortunately, wherever we are, we're not safe. But a young man comes here to study for a year, goes to a beautiful yeshiva founded by my students, Gash and Ruthie Yudin, and meets his death bringing food to Chayalim. It breaks the heart. And he's not the first student to be killed from the 1 year or the post-high school programs, as you call them. He's not the first by far. The Flatow girl had a student in BMT, rock was thrown at him in Chevron, and he became a vegetable and died a number of months later. I believe his name was Glot. It goes back a long time, and there were others. And Ribbono Shel Olam should just give us strength to go mechayil ol chayil. And that's Joshua Fass. Nefesh b'nefesh, you know, it began. Rabbi Fass was an American rabbi, a YU musmach. He was an associate rabbi in Boca Raton to Rabbi Kenny Branda. And then a second cousin, I think it was, from England, was killed by terrorists years ago. Cousin that he met once or twice in his life. And he said he would avenge his cousin's death by bringing hundreds of thousands of Jews on Aliyah. And as they say, the rest is history. A balabas, I believe, gave him $1 million in Boca to start it, nefesh b'nefesh, and the rest is history. Okay, I also want to add one more word, also unfortunately, about death to my students listening across the world. Sherry had to leave very suddenly on Wednesday. Her grandmother was critical. Her grandmother, Sherry, got there just in time to see her grandmother, and how her grandmother died is almost like a story of a Hasidic Rebbe. Sherry, who was very close to this grandmother, sang a song to her that her grandmother had taught her when she was a little girl, a song in Yiddish. And the song goes, As the Rebbe tans nara chassidim, as the Rebbe davened, whatever, when the Rebbe dances, all the chassidim dance. When the Rebbe eats, all the chassidim eat. And the song ends off, and as the Rebbe shlef, when the Rebbe sleeps, all the chassidim sleep. And when Sherry finished the song, her grandmother breathed her last breath and went into the world to come. So I just want to apologize because people trying to reach me, there's help. The office without Sherry does not function 100%. Yomo has pitched in to help to a certain degree, and Sherry contacted today. That's all she had in her mind, was to help Rafa Kefet. And she contacted and put a lady in charge. But I apologize if you sent me something. We don't know who sent it, and I can't answer properly. It's an emergency for the immediate few days. Because Rafa Shem Sherry should be back a week from now. She should be back in Gris if everything goes well. Okay. One more, not a correction, but a comment. I spoke about, I don't know whether it was the Sunday class or the Monday class, but the Slonim Beis Yaakov and what went on with the enmity towards the Sephardic girls and building a fence. So one of my virtual Talmidim, Avram Zuroff, who writes and wrote about this, so he said that it wasn't as bad as the newspapers made it out to be, because Sephardic girls that would accept the Hasidic rules were with the Hasidic girls. But the Sephardic girls that came from homes where, I know, they had a television, a computer, that's where they built the fence. So anyway, whatever the facts were, building a fence is a tragedy. And in the article, he writes that Slonim Hasidim told him it was a tremendous mistake. Be it as it is, it's the exact opposite of the Lubavitcher Rebbe, and now I recall I spoke about it last week in relation to the Lubavitcher Rebbe's conversation with the Belzer Rebbe. But we'll leave the Lubavitcher Rebbe for tomorrow. We have enough to say today. Okay, now today we're finishing out the fascinating tshuva on boys and girls singing together. And in this entire area, you saw the attitude of Rebbe Menashe Klein, but more important for us, the attitude of Rabbi Chiya Yaakov Weinberg, that Me'ika Hadin, it's hard to find the Heta. Listen to my words very carefully, because this is going to pop up again. It's very hard to find the Heta. But due to the fact that we're dealing with a subjective matter, and always remember, there's a big difference when you're dealing with the Din D'Oraita, Sveik D'Oraita L'Chumra, Sveik the Rabbanan L'Kula, I don't have to tell you the Psak of the Rambam, Hilchot Mamrim, the Gemara in Avodah Zarah. So, with subjective circumstances, Rabbi Menashe Klein told the inquirer, all right, b'di'eved, you can be samech on Rabbi Chiya Yaakov Weinberg, but I'm not happy about it. But of course, he gives Rabbi Chiya Yaakov Weinberg all the respect in the world, and he quotes the tshuva at length, and it's an amazing, amazing tshuva. We also spoke about the Chatam Sofer. The Chatam Sofer, very powerful. The king, who gave me a better title for him? The emperor, the king, someone gave me a better title. Anyone remember that?
Vic's friend.
Well, they went back to the States. In Hungary or Austria, this was the monarch, this was the person, and he's coming, and he was a Nohev Yisrael. And he's coming to the synagogue. I believe the Pope is coming to the synagogue in Italy in a few months. They announced it, all right, it's a big thing. The Pope comes to a shul. The Queen of London comes to a shul. It's now you got to greet him with betupim, machalat. And I write about it in Washington. I what can I tell you? One of my earliest memories of life is 1944, when Roosevelt was running for the fourth time for president. And he was coming to the Bronx on Shabbos in a motorcade campaigning. And Washington Avenue was known as the Avenue of Shuls. Today, if you go on Washington Avenue, you have to have the life insurance paid up before. And if you tell the agent you're going to go to Washington Avenue, they won't sell you life insurance. But that's where I grew up. What are you talking about? Washington Avenue? I mean, it's better today? They regentrified it? Halavai. Okay, Moshe. Moshe, I answered your question already. You walked out when I answered it in the dedication of the Shia. So pick up the start of the Shia, no matter what you do tonight. So Washington Avenue was called the Avenue of the Shuls. Now, all these shuls were splinters. One splintered from the other. One had a machlokes with the other. My grandfather, my Zayded, there were shuls he would daven in, shuls he wouldn't walk into, and it suddenly Roosevelt is coming. He was Jewish, of course. Suddenly Roosevelt, he would come home, and there was a Galiciana, Mr. Cohn, I remember him well, tall, had a little beard.
And when every daven from Mavid would be Elokeini, Yitzivani, and my grandfather would go crazy all Shabbos. He would say, Avushte, where is it written? Elokeini, Yitzivani. So that Shabbat, believe it or not, all the shuls got together. And we built an Erev. It was unbelievable. We built an Erev. And it was arranged with the local democratic wards, because they were all Jews and Italians, all good friends of the shuls, you understand. And we carried out a Sefer Torah to that maneuver, who kissed it from the car. He kissed the Torah. He didn't stand up. He had polio. But they didn't want the world to know that he's suffering. So he, from the car, he kissed the Sefer Torah. And the pictures appeared in the Daily News the next morning, the Daily Mirror. And the shuls got together. So the Chatam Sofer has this sheila that the king is coming to the shul. The men and women want to sing in his honor. And the Chatam Sofer very strongly asses, and he says it would be a disgrace to the king. He loves Yiddishkeit. He loves the Jews. And here you're going to transgress the halacha. And you have to explain to his entourage that men and women do not sing together, women do not sing in the shul, and that's the Chatam Sofer's tshuva, black and white, very strong. And we ended off the class, we quoted the Gemara in Sota, which the Chatam Sofer quotes, Daf Memchet Amud Aleph, that when women are singing, men strain to catch their melodious voices. Women generally have better voices than men, and this Gemara, even if they're singing together. And then I ended off the class, and Rabbi Menashe Klein was very down to earth. What do you mean the girls are singing with the boys? They have to pause occasionally. If a girl might pause, the boy is singing, etc., etc. All right, to say he's matir, I can't. To say he'll throw you out of the room, that far he can't go, because he understands Rabbi Chiel Yaakov Weinberg. Okay, gentlemen, from this point on, it's $36,000 linked to the shekel for the next half hour of the shiur. What do you say, my dear friend, Mr. Ross? Willing?
Yeah.
IOU list. $36,000 just went on to the IOU list. You should know, someone wanted to write me a check. I said, no, it has to go to charity. So you don't have to worry. You put on your tab. Okay. I'm now quoting a book that came out, and you should know this is the only book I prepared a major talk on, and I did not give it. The talk is in my files, and I did not give it because the Lichtenstein family was very upset. And I understood, even if I give the talk and I give a critical analysis, just talking about it will bring, you know, a lot of limelight, and I didn't want to offend Rabarin and Tova, my friends of over half a century by far. My friends, well over half a century, over 60 years. So I never gave the talk. The book is a fascinating book. It's by a very dear friend of mine, Rabbi David Holzer, and it's The Rav Thinking Aloud. Transcripts of personal conversations with Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik, supplemented with personal reminiscences from a shamash, the author, Rabbi David Holzer, edited by Rabbi Aryeh Holzer. This revised, I have both the first version of this book and the second one, published in 2009. Now David and Aryeh, these are all people I know intimately, Rona, his wife, they're very good people. Now, anyone who's read the book, I've told you many times over, I am convinced that every word in this book is correct. Some people said David made it up. I know David, but I can prove to you the words are correct. In the book, he tells a story about yours truly and the Rav, the last time I saw the Rav alive in 1983, and a whole conversation I had with the Rav. I can tell you no one in the world knew about that conversation. David has it word by word. He obviously had a recording. He recorded the Rav. He was the shamash. Did the Rav know he was recording? I don't know. David claims the Rav knew. Maybe it was a little bit clandestinely, but he recorded the Rav word by word. So That tells me, and it's a you can pick up the book, you'll see the conversation, I don't want to go into it now, it's about Balei Tshuva and Eichle Karevotam, how to bring them closer. But to understand this book, and I've told you this more than once, it's the title, The Rav Thinking Aloud by Rabbi David Holtz is misleading. The title should be The Rav Thinking Aloud to David Holzer. And here you have to understand there are matters which are subjective. The Rav is talking to you. What he's going to tell me on a hashkafic issue may not be exactly what he's going to tell someone from Lakewood who came to talk with him in learning and is talking why the Rav left Agudat Yisrael. He may get a slightly different version. It doesn't mean that the Rav has changed his mind. It means the Rav doesn't want to be offensive, and the Rav knows who he's speaking with. I told you, the best example, David told me this. He asked Rebbe, can I shave during Sfira? And the Rav said, you shouldn't shave. Underline the you. The Rav shaved during Sfira. We're all witnesses to it. He came to class every Tuesday, Wednesday, from the 40s, the 50s, the 60s, into his wife's death. After his wife's death, he never took off the Avelut beard, which is a terrible sign. It's a sign he never got over his wife's death, which we all know to be a fact. And you should know, when they appointed Rav Moshe Tzvi Neria, Rosh Yeshiva, the first B'nai Akiva Yeshiva in the state of Israel, Rav Moshe Tzvi Neria, who brought about the great revolution here in Israel of the today, believe it or not, if you saw Friday's papers, they did a survey on who supplied the most soldiers, the most katsinim for the army, and who supplied the most lochamim, in other words, what you call a profile that you're a lochem, not a job of aspaka. What's that in English?
Aspaka.
What's it in
Hebrew?
No, they're combat. I know Hebrew lochem, but I'm trying to think the word aspaka.
Logistics,
right, logistics is correct. Yeah, I've spoken Hebrew too much, I forget my English, but okay. So you should know that the 10 top high schools in the country, all of them, all providing the greatest percentage of combat soldiers from their graduates, let's say this high school, 84%, this one, 83%, all 10 were religious high schools. And it was in Marib, it was in Yediot, it was in Yisrael Hayom, and this all began with Rav Moshe Tzvi Neria. So when they appointed Rav Moshe Tzvi Neria, it was right after Pesach, during Sfira, they came upon this idea, but they said to him, Rav Moshe, when Lag BaOmer comes, you shave your beard. So he said, what do you mean? I'm going to be a Rosh Yeshiva. You can't be a Rosh Yeshiva in Israel without a beard. This is before Rabbi Lichtenstein came to Israel. So they say to Rav Moshe Tzvi Neria, your beard is a beard of avelut. To be a Rosh Yeshiva, you need a beard of happiness. You'll shave it, and you'll grow a beard afterwards. You follow? The Rav never took off his beard, but the mourning for his wife, we don't have to elaborate. But we all knew he shaved 100%. In my time, who didn't shave during Sfira? Unheard of. Everyone, we walked among Goyim. The Rav held its Avelet, it's Yud Beit Chodesh Avelet. The Rav had a whole Shita. And therefore, if someone will say you're maneuver, meaning you work with Goyim, you're walking, you get on the bus, the subway, without a beard. Okay, it's a different world then. I don't say this applies today, but that was the Rav. So here in this book, I gotta give you one more drop of background. David Holzer was under a lot of pressure, David and Rona, when they got married, and they were under a lot of pressure from a couple named Malkavar and Rakefet to settle in Israel. I'm happy to say that in the next generation, Holzers, including students of mine, did settle in Israel. So David and Rona lived here for a while, and what would David do here? So David saw that these post-high school programs that we spoke about at the start of the hour, have a future. He organized a post-high school program for women, Machon Bina. And it was quite successful. I want you to know he had a very nice program, but There was a fault line there. Rona's brothers, the famous Rav Yochanan Zweig, he was living in Miami Beach. And I think Rav David went to the Slonim Rebbe because his family is Slonim Chassidim. And he asked the Rebbe, and the Rebbe said, it's better to sit in Miami Beach and think about Yerushalayim than to sit in Yerushalayim and think about Miami Beach. You can end off the rest of the story. Now, David went back, but the high school for a number of years, this post-high school program, remember I spoke in it, we spent the Shabbat there, it was very impressive. Page 120, I'm now quoting from David. I asked the Rebbe the following question in the early 1980s, shortly before starting my seminary in Israel, Machon Bina. The Rebbe was actually kind enough to meet with the students of the seminary in his apartment at the beginning of the opening year, September 1983. In other words, before the girls left New York or left the Eastern Seaboard to come to Israel, they met with the Rebbe. I need not tell you, if I was a girl, And I had the choice of schools, but there's one school where I can meet the Rabbi Soloveitchik before I get on the plane. That's the school I would have chosen. And I asked the Rav, can you rely on any of the Heterim regarding Kol Isha, such as multiple voices, or if they are saying the Varim Sheb, excuse me, Kedusha, Tefillah, Smirah, etc. And David footnotes our, you know, the same deal we just gave, Sri Dayesh, David footnotes it, and now he quotes the Rav's answer. This is verbatim. I know all the Heterim, and none may be relied upon. And I hear the Rav in my own head, I hear it in Yiddish, it's Kenala Heterim. I know all the Heterim, but you can't rely upon them. Now, Yitzchak, relax. There are cherets for your Rebbe, please. So Yitzchak, you beat me to it. I'm looking at Yitzchak's face, and Rabbi Rubin, who's a graduate of Maimonides in Boston, who already started Maimonides in the early 40s, Yitzchak is sitting there, and he's ready to spit out that this cannot be, because he can say Eidut Nemana that the Rav had mixed singing in Boston, right or wrong.
They had a school choir.
And
boys and girls.
Boys and girls, okay.
Nothing would have gone, took place in the school that he did not approve.
Right.
Would you say his brother was more to the right arm?
Politically, he certainly was more to the right. In halacha, I don't know. They were fairly equal.
The other day,
Neither of them carried on Shabbos. Neither of them were Samach and Erev. Both of them were Choshish for the Shita of the Mishkanot Yaakov. You follow?
Yeah.
So,
I heard Chaim is Soloveitchik.
Right.
That's Rabbanim's
son. Right. Wait, Chaim, you're talking about Rabbanim's son, the youngest son, from Beit Shemesh, right.
Yeah.
All right, he's a fine individual, Baruch Hashem. They both raised wonderful, wonderful children. So, how do you account for this? Yitzchak is saying, Eidut Nemana, and I believe Yitzchak. Yitzchak, I know him on to 70 years, or 65 years, and he's an honest guy. He's an honest guy. So you see, what I really believe is very simple. Take the Rav and put him into Rabbi Chiel Yaakov Weinberg's tshuva. And that's exactly the Rav. Just like Rabbi Chiel Yaakov Weinberg, at the start of his tshuva, knocks the hell out of, and see, this is what I alluded to before. I grew up in a world where YU was still involved with Teira Vadas and Chaim Berlin and even Lakewood, and it was shayach to go back and forth to a certain degree. Today there's a tremendous chasm, and no one has anything to do with the other one, which is sad. Yeah, I'm happy to hear that, very happy to hear that. But more or less, the average YU guy I speak with, if you mention Lakewood to him, you know, he looks ballistic, fanatics. He doesn't understand where they're coming from and why they are the way they are. So the Rav, there's no question that he probably deep down, it's Schwarzig, if it's hard, when I speak of my Rebbe, I always break into Yiddish, I apologize, but you understand why. I had to break my teeth to learn Yiddish so I could study with the Gedolei Yisrael from Europe, and of course the Rav was the greatest dream. So Rebbe evidently felt, you know, like the Sridei Eish. But Halacha L'Maisa in Boston, in Maimonides, you have a mixed choir. But he's talking to David, and he knows David, where David is coming from, and he knows where David's school is, by the way. It was in a Haredi neighborhood of Jerusalem. So he told him, Echeta, I do not find. Now, I refer you to a different book, two volumes that came out at least 15 years ago, and they're starting to gain wide appreciation today. When they first came out, everyone was jumping and shooting and maledicting and cursing. You can't believe what went on. But I'm proud to say that there are two sections to these two volumes. One section is a biography, and I know the author well, and the author always boasts to me that no one has found one mistake in the biography outside of Avraham Soloveitchik, who challenged the author, and we agreed it's a fielder's choice. And I know that the author rewrote the sentence, and he's waiting for a publisher to be smart enough to put out a new edition, not just print it cheaply. The rest of the book are called Insights, and people, it's a riot. People shoot at the author. The poor guy sitting in an office not far from here, going through his emails from New York, a big Chabadnik putting out another book, says he wants to save the cover of the Rebbe. The Rebbe made a terrible mistake. And he says, he says that the Rav studied with his Malamed and Chaslavich when the Rav was 7 or 8. And this guy says it cannot be, because his Malamed would not teach Tanya to anyone under 13, 14. That's what he found out in Chabad from the real insiders, from Rabbi Yoel Cohn, who's the biggest Chabadnik alive today. So the poor Rebbe, under attack, writes back to this character, who I like, by the way. I write back to him, you don't understand what the insights are about. That's not Rav Kefet speaking. That's the Rav. The Katlerius Rav Kefet found hundreds among so many tapes, articles, put together the Rav talking about his life, about his Weltanschauung. And if someone made a mistake, it's the Rav. All right, you want to correct it? You want to correct Rabbi Soloveitchik? B'bakasha. You better be careful with your footnote. Anyway, this goes on and on because we uncovered more material. I showed him where in my biography, if you read it carefully, you'll see the Rav had to be about 10, 11 when he studied Tanya, because he didn't read Skoslovich until he was 10 years of age. And now he has a problem with Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein, because Rabbi Aaron also says 7, 8, whatever, in his article in Great Jewish Thinkers, B'nai B'rith, 1962. Anyway, the insights in this volume are all the Rav speaking. It is not the author. The author deserves credit for collecting it and translating from the Yiddish into English, from the Hebrew into English, etc. The volume I'm referring to is The Rav, The World of Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik by someone named Aaron Rakefet Makaf Rothkoff, published 1999. I'm quoting from volume 1. Volume 1, page 178. And it's a story that the Rav told, and I'm quoting this story from the Boston Rebbe, Rabbi Levi Yitzchak Halevi Horowitz, who told this in Boston in 1993. You all know that the Rav lived in Boston, and in Boston there were two dominant Torah figures, Mori Urebi, who was the Gaon of the world, and the Boston Urebi, Torah Vadas graduate, inherited his father's position after initially trying to be a businessman, a printer, went bankrupt, and he was the Kirov in America outside of Lubavitch. And with medical problems, what the Boston Urebi accomplished is beyond words. Later came in Aliyah, lived his final years in Har Nof, as you know. I'm now quoting the Boston Rebbe, quoting the Rav. The Rebbe spoke about his great-grandfather, Rabbi Yosef Ber Soloveitchik, the author of the Beit HaLevi. When in Warsaw, he decided to visit Rabbi Yaakov Gesundheit, the community's rabbi. Now, Rabbi Yaakov Gesundheit, the Soloveitchik family considered him a Gon Adir. I taught quite a number of his descendants here in Jerusalem. He was Rav in Warsaw. Don't ask what he went through. The Maskilim squealed on him to the government. He was arrested in the middle of singing Lechadodi Friday night. Follow whatever what the man went through. Okay, Rav Yosef Ber, the Rav's namesake, the Brisker of the Beit HaLevi, goes to Warsaw. They were seated in the living room, and suddenly they heard the Jewish maid in the kitchen start to sing. Rav Yankala immediately stood up and angrily walked in the direction of the kitchen to stop the maid's singing. Rav Yosef Ber also rose and pulled his host aside. The rabbi of Warsaw asked the Beit HaLevi why he stopped him. "I will explain my actions," said Rav Yosef Ber. "Your maid works very hard. The only enjoyment and pleasure she has is singing. If it is true that we are enjoined from listening to her singing, okay. It is true, let me start again, that we are enjoined from listening to her singing, but we can step outside or go into a different room. However, you want to stop her from singing? That is not fair. It is her only enjoyment." Powerful story? All right, that story you can analyze many ways over. Halachically, a woman is singing in the other room, so what? You're not, you're learning, you're talking and learning. Let it be. But even if you're halachically troubled, Medav Sina Mensch, you have to be a human being. I mean, if you've studied Musa, you know what I'm talking about. Musa. I mean, the real Musa, not the phonies today who hold the Mesila Jesharim and... That's not mushy. You have to live it. You have to live it. You have to work on yourself. Okay, that's new. How do you stop another person? Have Rahmanat, she works hard. That's her enjoyment. And this story, the Rav told a number of times. I'll let you in on a secret now. My way of thinking, which the Rav's daughter, Dr. Taratwesky, was a little bit upset with me. I'll explain to you my way of thinking. I could have told this story quoting the Rav. He said it a number of times. You know, in certain stories you repeat. Someone accused me of repeating on a blog. I saw someone said, "I repeat." Yeah, it's true. Every year I have different students, so there are certain things I repeat, that God exists and we have to be good Jews. You're correct. I do repeat it many times in many different versions. But this story I could have quoted from the Rav. Ah, but I had the Boston Rebbe. What was the thought behind it? If I quote it from the Rav, a right winger will say, "Ah, that's Rabbi Soloveitchik." If I quote the Boston Rebbe, oh boy, they're not going to throw the Boston Rebbe out the door so quickly. You follow me, Simon? Now, you should know that I did this in another place too, with Rabbi Shulweis Yitzchak, you know what I'm talking about, the conservative rabbi who the Rav was very fond of. And I quote the Boston Rebbe that the Boston Rebbe said about the Harold, about this conservative rabbi, et gehat a Yiddish neshama. He had a real Jewish soul. So I told the Torah, I quoted Rabbi Shul, I quoted the Boston Rebbe, so if they're going to throw darts, they'll throw it at him, not at your father. And she said, my father was big enough and strong enough to stand on his own two feet. You follow? You didn't have to quote the Boston Rebbe. I could have quoted the Rav as saying that the Shulweis, the Rav had an affinity for, because he really was an Ohev Torah as much as a conservative rabbi can be. You know, he didn't know much, and he was a product of his environment. He was a chaplain in World War II, and he fought for General Patton. He was one of the chaplains in his unit, and he was a character. They say when he came back, maybe you remember this, they say when he came back to Boston for a number of months, General Patton gave him an army jeep that he drove around Boston in an army jeep with all the symbols of a chaplain, of a ranking officer, etc. So, but this is quite a story. All right? Now, this story shows up in a volume that if you own it, you are a very wealthy man. Danny, you own it?
No.
Who owns it here? You have your insurance? You have it on? You got it? You should know, I have a student who treats my eyes and makes me glasses and never takes any money. Won't take money. I'm not, Baruch Hashem, today I can afford money to pay. No, he won't take money from his Rebbe. So I gave him a gift. I had a number of copies of Making of a Gadol. I gave him a gift.
It was very expensive.
Believe me.
$100.
That's the original copies I got, you know.
Original copies, he has a machsan for them. He's waiting till...
No. That's on the autonomy of... You're mixing up the original with the autonomy of a band. That's a separate volume, which I also have from the author. And I have both editions, but I wound up with two copies of the improved edition, which I'll explain in 1 second. But what you're talking about is the author won't allow that to be published until 25 years after his death. That is the autonomy of a band. And when you read that, you're going to have some real problems. For instance, how Rabbi Metzger got to be chief rabbi, and how the people around Rabbi Yashuv hid the letter from Reb Zelig Epstein, who's the one gadol in the right-wing world for whom English is basically a native language. And he wrote a letter to Rav Yashuv that he went through both volumes. There's nothing wrong with them, and they shouldn't answer them. And that letter, those around Rav Yashuv never showed it to him. And in Economy of a Band, you will see a photograph of Reb Zelig Epstein's letter to Rav Yashuv in Reb Zelig Epstein's own handwriting. You follow what I'm saying? So, Halavai, Reb Nassim should live another 50 years. And let it be said that if that book appears 25 years after his death, it will shake the world up. By then, there'll be a million one new episodes to talk about. It'll be ancient history. Anyway, this is volume one of Making of a Gadol. And as you know, it was written by Reb Nassim Kamenetsky, Nathan Kamenetsky, the son of Reb Yaakov Kamenetsky. And if you know Reb Nassim, and he's a very brilliant individual. He's the son-in-law of Reb David Lifshitz. His picture appears in the Rav, where I have pictures of Talmidei HaRav when he married Reb David Lifshitz's daughter. The Rav spoke at Sheva Brachas. I believe it was from Reb David Lifshitz's house. And in the Rav, you'll see that picture with Reb Nassim Kamenetsky, with his wife, with Reb David, with the Rav, with Reb Mordechai Elephant sitting there as well. Now, Reb Yaakov is not there. Reb Yaakov is not there. But remember, when Sheva Brachas comes, it's all, I just went through a lot of smachot, Baruch Hashem. I should say simchas, not smachot. Smachot has a bad connotation at times. And we have a lot of smachot here. Simchas. So, I told my wife, we both are wiped out, and we said, Fadan, I quoted Rabbi Levine, my wife didn't know this, she loved it, Fadan nachas tachmen hopen kayach, bishvil hanachat skukim lekoach. Okay, Shimon? Simon, you understand? So, with Sheva Brachas, Rabbi Yaakov lived where he lived, in Muncie, in Brooklyn, maybe Brooklyn at the time, to come to Washington Heights, it's not for Rabbi Yaakov at that age, after the wedding a night or two before. So, Reb, he tells the story that in this volume, it's on page 21 of the foreword, XX, Roman numerals 21 in the foreword, he tells the following story, and you have to know the players here, that Reb Yitzchak Kulitz, who later becomes chief rabbi of Jerusalem, was furious about a Rosh Yeshiva in Yerushalayim who took a story about Rabbi Zalman Meltzer and totally, on purpose, it's like someone just told me an hour ago that Pircha Agudat Yisrael came out in their magazine that Mr. Shraga Feigelman de Lubitsch established the first yeshiva high school in America. A vulgar lie. January 2016, Aaron Rakefet is drinking a l'chaim because it is 100 years since Talmudical Academy opened its doors. David, David Goldis, are you listening? We got to drink a l'chaim when I'm with you. 100 years, MTA as it's called today, although you don't need DM, there's no Brooklyn TA anymore. So, now who is Rebbe Tzekulis? Rebbe Tzekulis was a big Talmud Chacham, I believe he was a Hevron graduate. He later becomes chief rabbi of Yerushalayim. I daven next to him every morning in Ohol Rivka. A Talmud Chacham par excellence, quite broad for his background. And this Rosh Yeshiva was giving the Talmidim a shmuis, and he tells the following story. How Rabbi Zalman Meltzer was going up the steps to his house and overheard the cleaning lady singing to herself while washing the floor. Rabbi Zalman went back down the street and paced the ground for a long while until she had finished her work. And only then did he return to his house. Now, Rabbi Zalman Meltzer, this is the elder Rosh Yeshiva of Eretz Yisrael. This is the Rosh Yeshiva of Sklutz. This is a Talmud Mufak of Reb Chaim Soloveitchik in Voloshin. This is the Fadmor Rabbarin Kotler. That's who we're talking about. The Rosh Yeshiva understood Rabbi Zalman's actions as indicative of how careful he was in avoiding the sound of a singing woman. Kol b'isha ever. For the time it would have taken him to walk from mid-staircase into entering his home. Even those few steps, because when he would enter the home, the woman would certainly have stopped singing. So even for those few steps when the cleaning lady wouldn't know that the Rosh Yeshiva is coming in, he didn't want to hear Kol Isha. In actuality, said Rabbi Kulitz, Rabbi Zalman Meltzer was concerned that he would walk into the house. The woman who enjoyed singing while on the job would be inconvenienced by having to stop singing for the rest of her working time. Do you hear the difference in coloration of the story? And in his footnote, Rav Nosson Kamenetsky cites the Rav, the world of Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik, for a similar story regarding Rav Yoshe Ber Brisk, related by Rav Levi Yitzchak Horowitz in the name of Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik. Wow, what a story. And he brings another proof that in the biography of Rabbi Zalman, written by his grandson, the story is told as it occurred. And his grandfather explained his actions. And he continued pacing on the porch just outside the door where he could likely still hear the woman singing if he chose to listen. But obviously, he was concentrating, thinking and learning. He didn't choose to listen, but he didn't want to come in and disturb her, the cleaning lady who worked so hard, the shivcha, the Yiddish shivcha. Let her sing, let her enjoy. It's exactly the same story as the Beit HaLevi. Wow. Footnote on this page, we're now on page 22 of the preface. Rabbi Yaakov Yitzchak Ruderman told a very similar stories to graduates of the Chafetz Chaim Yeshiva in New York. Now, you all know who Rav Ruderman was, right? Rav Ruderman was the Slabatka Ilui, came to America. Rav Sheftel Kramer's son-in-law, Rav Sheftel Kramer, was Rav New Haven. Rav Sheftel Kramer went to Cleveland, organized the yeshiva. Rav Ruderman was his son-in-law. Rav Ruderman took the yeshiva to Baltimore. And in Baltimore, it became the world-famous Ne'er Yisrael Yeshiva. It took over the city of Baltimore. When you talk about Baltimore in the 1940s, Baltimore was a yeshiva and yeshiva college city. When you talk about Baltimore today, Ne'er Yisrael, no one else has real influence in Baltimore. It is really a success story par excellence. And Rav Ruderman told the following story. And Rav Nosson Kamenetsky has a very interesting insight. He heard the recording. It is apparent in his tone that he was unsure whether to tell this story to the audience. But he told it nevertheless. He said he was invited to spend a Shabbat at the home of the Rav of Elizabeth, New Jersey, Rebbe Elazar Meir Prell. How many of you have heard this name? Please make believe you did, so the ignorant will pass for the wise. No, Herbie. He's from Elizabeth. He heard the name. It's before your time. Reb Elazar Meir Prell was a Yudapeish Talmud Chacham first rank. He came to America. He was a Rosh Yeshiva at what you call Reitz today in the 1920s, I believe. Then it became too hard simply to commute, so he remained Rav of Elizabeth. When he died, he had an unmarried daughter, and the word went out, whoever marries his daughter will inherit the rabbinate. And there was a shidduch made between Rav Mordechai Pinchas Teitz and Rav Prell's daughter. A beautiful shidduch. Some of you know Rabbi Yosef Blau. I know him as Jerry, my old chaver. Rabbi Yosef Blau is married to the daughter of Rabbi Prell. Okay? Rivka Blau is Rabbi Teitz, the granddaughter of Rabbi Prell. Thank you for correcting me. The granddaughter of Rabbi Prell, the daughter of Rabbi Teitz. Rivka Blau is Rivka Teitz. On her mother's side, she's Rivka Prell. Okay? So he tells the following story. He's invited to the home. He's a newcomer to America, Rav Ruderman, before the arrival of the Sabbath. The Rav, meaning Rabbi Prell, took him aside for a confidential exchange of words. He told his guest that he had several daughters eating at the Sabbath table who enjoyed Shabbos by singing the Zmiris along with him. The Rav told him that Rav Baruch Ber Leibovich had been a guest in his home in 1929 when he visited America. Rav Baruch Ber Leibovich, who are we talking about? The Branovitcher Rosh Yeshiva? No, that's Rav Chaim Ratzman, excuse me. The Kamenetzer Rosh Yeshiva. Rav Baruch Ber Leibovich, Kamenetzer Rosh Yeshiva, Talmud Mufak of Rav Chaim Brisker, this is the Birchat Shmuel. Rav Baruch Ber Leibovich had been a guest in his home in 1929, and when the girls began singing, he stood up and ran out of the room, unintentionally perturbing the Shabbos for the girls and humiliating their father. Rabbi Prell asked Rabbi Ruderman, would he do the same thing? Rabbi Ruderman replied that with his Slabatka background, he would not destroy the family Sabbath spirit or embarrass his host. He would remain sitting and not listen to the girls, despite the seemingly normative halachic imperative to leave the room. And now a quote from Rabbi Ruderman. My frumkeit does not have to hurt others end quote, he concluded. Okay. Wow. Sam, you heard what you heard? You know the players, you know the people. To me, these are real people. I didn't know all of them. Rabbi Prail died before I was born or when I was in diapers. But from my research, I know them all. Okay? A good Jew has to live at the same time, simultaneously, concomitantly, the past, the present, and concern for the future.
His youngest son just died.
Rabbi Prail?
Joseph Prail.
Oh, Baruch Dayan Emet. He just died. I knew him quite well. Oh, wow. Well, he was in Elizabeth, right? He was a professor of math, I recall.
Not math, I think.
Not math? I thought math, but could be some.
Was a mayor, Titus, a professor.
Professor of math. And this is his, what's the
uncle.
First? Uncle. This is his uncle. That's right. That's
his brother.
Wow. Anyway, to be a good Jew, you have to live a triple header. To be Obama, you live the present, right here, now. The past does not teach you anything, and you're not concerned with the future. Follow the difference? That's the difference. And that's the heart of Yiddishkeit. If you master that, you understand what Rosh Hashanah is about, what Tfilat Musaf is about, what the Zichronot are about, what the Malchiyot, Zichronot, Shofrot, it all becomes meaningful. Yitz, it doesn't end here. Have you ever published a book? So you know, when you publish a book, there are bound to be mistakes, be new information. So when the second edition, what he calls the improved edition, and very little changes, just I don't want to go into it, I once spoke about it, just one thing is left out, and I think the idiots of that man's family to insist he left it out, I can't get over it. If I got a smack from a Baron Cutler, I'd be very proud to have it published. You follow me? Because it shows he may not agree with you, but at least he feels he's machshev of you. You're a person. You have an opinion. So he published Errata when the volume came out. I believe it's 2 pages. I have it at home, of course. I Xerox what I need for here.
You're talking about Making of a Gadol?
Yeah, Making of a Gadol, Errata. And on this footnote I just quoted, he says, add the following. And this is fascinating. And this confirms other stories I heard. Gentlemen in Yerushalayim HaKodesh, 100 years ago, almost 100 years ago, there were 2 great rabbis. One, Rav Avram Yitzchak HaKohen Cook, and one, Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld. All of you know that these two men, their hashkafas were light years apart. Rav Cook was the great leader of what becomes the religious Zionist movement. He said, Ha-Yashan Titkadesh, Va-Hachadash Titkadesh. A very powerful statement, which we're seeing happening before our eyes with all the heartache we have here today. The old will become new, and the new will become sanctified. Rav Sonnenfeld was the leader of the Eda Charedit, not recognizing the Jewish agency, not recognizing Jewish sovereignty. There cannot be Jewish sovereignty before Mashiach. And these were 2 individuals, great Talmidei Chachamim, one of them a Litvisher of Hasidic background, Rabbi Cook, one of them an Austro-Hungarian, Rav Sonnenfeld, and 2 different hashkafas, although they both had mutual respect for each other. My son, Rabbi Joseph, that's Rabbi Joseph Kamenetsky, called my attention to a report by a grandson of Rabbi Joseph Chaim Sonnenfeld, and he gives the source, that at a birthday party of a daughter of an unnamed high commissioner of Palestine. Now, who does it have to be? Presumably, Sir Herbert Samuel. Herbert Samuel became the high commissioner of Palestine after the Balfour Declaration, and he was a Shomer Shabbos Jew, and everyone respected him. And when his daughter had a birthday party, you could understand that both rabbis, Cook and Sonnenfeld, would be there. When our father announced that she would sing, Rabbi Cook left the room And Rabbi Sonnenfeld stayed, bent down his head, and did not listen. The latter explained to his escort that the commissioner would have been insulted had he left the room. This episode occurred within a decade prior to what I portrayed what happened in Elizabeth. Thus, and here he mixes it up, I'm now correcting, tell me if I'm not right. He says, Rabbi Leibowitz behaved like his Rabbi Leibowitz behaved like his Voloshiner peer, Rabbi Cook, by walking out, and Rabbi Ruderman, like Slabotka admirer, Rabbi Sonnenfeld. So, wow, what information, what a story. The Rav, the Beit HaLevi, and Rabbi Yaakov Gesundheit, who's one of his granddaughters, my Talmidah, lives near me. When I see her again, I'll tell her about this. And we met Rabbi Yitzchak Kulitz, and the Rosh Hashiva, Rabbi Zalman Meltzer, and the footnote, tying it all together, and the story about Rabbi Ruderman and Rabbi Baruch Ber Leibowitz at the home of Rabbi Prel. And ultimately, Rabbi Cook and Rabbi Sonnenfeld. And there are a number of other stories that indicate Rabbi Sonnenfeld was more mekil on issues and Rav Cook was more machmir at times. So it shows you can't say this Mizrachiite is always mekil and this Eidach HaReditnik is always machmir, chas v'chalila. In parentheses, I'll just state what I stated, but put it into context here. I've said it a number of times. I don't remember how to set it in class, but Rabbi Sonnenfeld must have done something right. Rabbi Cook has very few direct descendants. There were tragedies in the family. A grandson was killed in Hebron already. This is my time in Israel. And the direct descendants he has, many of them are Haredim or semi-Haredi. Rav Sonnenfeld has hundreds upon hundreds, if not thousands, of direct descendants. The overwhelming majority wear kippot srugot, what we call in modern Hebrew, srugim, a word that Yitz and I didn't know growing up. Yitzchak, we haven't ended yet. Wait and see.
Meir Shapiro.
Yitzchak Dittag is quoting something I just spoke about years ago. Reb Meir Shapiro, the Lubliner, it breaks the heart when you talk of him, how he built the Yeshiva Chachmei Lublin, and that became the head of the Gestapo. So, all right, with all our heartache here, Moshe, a Jew who has any seichel has to live here, and we need a stronger army, and we need a better minister of defense, because there has to be a solution. This can't go on in the same little... Today, yeah, but one girl killed Lo aleinu. Anyway, so Reb Meir Shapiro was traveling through Europe, raising funds for the... I can't go into it now. It's worth giving a whole lecture one day on Yeshiva Chachmei Lublin. It's a fascinating story, but it would take endless hours now. So he was going to be in Rotten. Wanted to go to Rotten, wanted to meet the Chafetz Chaim. So he wrote to the Chafetz Chaim, he'd like to come meet him and like to be his guest for Shabbos. Chafetz Chaim said, with pleasure. Then he found out that the Chafetz Chaim sits at the table with his wife and I think it was a daughter yet from the second marriage, who later marries Rav Mendel Zaks. His other daughters were married already, and the Chafetz Chaim and Meir Lublin, that a chassid like him doesn't sit with women. I told you the Ger Chassidim sit separate in their own home. So he wrote to the Chafetz Chaim that would he do him a favor and that Shabbat sit separate. Chafetz Chaim wrote back he shouldn't come. That it's an open mission in Ketuvot that a man has to eat with his wife on Shabbos. So that's what Yitzchak is referring to. But I'm referring to something else now. My dear friends, I've been privileged in my life to know many great, important people. Gedol Yisrael and others as well. An example, Meir Kahana I knew very well. My Madrich Bnei Akiva taught his children. Shlomo LeKalbach. The name Shlomo LeKalbach. Wow. What a fascinating individual. If ever it was said Acharei Mot Kedoshim, it's Shlomo LeKalbach. All over, they're singing his tunes. Despite Moshe's tshuva, Reb Menashe Klein's tshuva, we'll get to it. If not this year, next year. God should give strength, sign it. If not next year, 2 years from now. Fascinating material. Shlaimala, to quote Rakefet, when you become a hybrid, at times the results can be questionable. Who is Shlaimala Kalbach? No, if you studied with Rakefet 20 years ago when he gave his lectures on the history of Torah in modern times, you would recognize the name, Danny. Kalbach. German Orthodoxy. La creme de creme. The best. Comes to America, they run away from Hitler, and he studies in Lakewood, one of the early great Talmidim of Reb Aaron Kotler. Yomo Ayeka in Lakewood. If that's not enough for you, the Riatz, Reb Yosef Yitzchak Schneerson, the sixth Lubavitcher Rebbe, picks him up, and he becomes a chassid b'lev v'nefesh of the sixth Rebbe and then the seventh Rebbe. Wow. A Yekka, a Lakewood guy, and a chassid all in one. All right. A very talented individual, a great neshama, a great Avat Yisrael. There were two great chassidim whom the Riatz picked up. One was Zalman Shechter. The other one was Shlomo Kalbach, and they both wound up totally different ways. Zalman Shlechter.
What they decided on their own to go?
Yeah, no, the Rebbe didn't send them. The Rebbe picked them up. They decided to become Hasidim. They were very loyal, devoted Hasidim. But then they went their own ways. We're going to see in a minute. Relax, Shaya. We'll get there. My dear students, Zalman Shechter. What did he change his name to? He hebraized his name.
Shlomi.
He became an apikoros. Unfortunately, at Universal, I've seen it. It's hard to believe that someone who knew, but he didn't. He was in the London. He didn't know like Shlomo. Shlomo could have been a gon adir had he remained in Lakewood. He had a terrific mind. I knew his. He had a terrific mind. His twin brother, I was very close to. Elia Chaim, who was rabbi in Hillside, and my wife was very close to his wife, Hadassah. She was a Schneerson. We were very close to them. But Shlomo was something very special, they say. You know, he had the goods. He had the goods to be a Gadol, had the mind. You need a lot more to be a Gadol.
They were twin brothers.
Twin brothers, absolutely. So Shlomo certainly remained from. But he did acts that very hard for us to understand. I'll put it that way. I don't want to be judgmental. I saw with my own eyes. He hugged every woman. And what can I tell you? I've taught, you know, for 31 years, I taught women, thousands upon thousands of women. I would never, never touch a woman. And if a Talmidah offered me her hand, if it ever happened, I wouldn't even shake it. An older lady, all right, you can't, but a Talmid has to understand, the Rebbe can't shake, you have to keep a distance. And we'll talk about that tomorrow, actually. I want to talk in relation to RCA and say a few words and read to you a critique that a rabbi wrote, a rabbi who I respect, and he wrote an interesting critique of what I said last week, and I just want to explain how machloket, and you can choose whoever you want. In 50 years, we'll see who was corrected. So I could be or he could be, it's equal. It's a fieldless choice at this point. So, Shlaimala. Okay. Somehow, after his death, he blossomed. And he remains acharei mot kedoshim. We all sing his nigunim in the shul. I daven Friday night now. Every Shabbos mevarchim, they have marav. They get less of a crowd because people don't want to stay longer. And they daven kabach kabbalat Shabbat. And in Haredi places too, they daven kabbach. It's like the world has made their peace with kabbach shortcomings, and the good outweighs anything else. With this being said, a volume just appeared. The Real Shlomo by Rabbi Chaim Dalfin. He's a Chabadnik, born and bred, Nishta Gekumina, Gvarina, born into Chabad. An interesting individual, Rabbi Dalfin. And he explores this volume. There are two volumes came out of Shlomo. One is a biography by Ophir, by Rabbi Dr. Nathan Affenbacher Ophir, whom I know very well. Very interesting piece of work. And this is like an analysis of who was Shlomo. And I have to give Dalfin credit. He actually interviews the women who wanted to place charges against Shlomo after his death. There's a whole website where women write in and say that he interviewed the women. And you got to read the book. It's worth reading and studying and seeing how he analyzes Shlomo's life and everything that he did. Now, we just said a minute ago, and Shire agreed with me, that he became a Chabadnik. This is well known. And then in the mid-50s, he left Chabad. I'm now quoting from this new book, page 107. Departure from Chabad. Although Shlomo continued doing outreach and even brought people to the Rebbe, as time went on, his commitment to the Rebbe diminished. And you have to ask yourself, why? What happened? Okay? This is a serious question. Rakefitch, you can't ask this question because the ultimate figure in my life is Mori Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik, and you all know that I live with the Rav daily. So you really can't ask this question. I learned in Lakewood, and I had, I'm probably the only person alive who once argued with Rav Aaron Cutler word to word, face to face, mouth to mouth on which is better, B'nai Akiva or anti-Zionism. And we had and I stand on my theory that had Rav Aaron come to Israel after World War II, he would have been a Mizrahiite. Not unlike the whole Meltzer family, Rabbi Sazal, Meltzer's children, grandchildren, Rav Aaron would have been giving Torah to the masses here. Okay, but that's my guess, if the biggest word in the dictionary. But why? The straw that broke the camel's back, listen to this, was when he did a program with a mechitza, a separation between the genders, and did not allow the woman to sing. Most people left the room. Something had to change, Shlomo concluded. He discussed it with the Rebbe. We're not talking about the seventh Rebbe now, Rav Menachem Mendel, the Ramash, and asked for permission to remove the barrier and allow women to sing among mixed company. The Rebbe told him he could not allow this under the official or unofficial umbrella of Chabad. While Shlomo understood, he chose to go his own way. At this point, he began outreach in his independent manner. It retained a strong resemblance to Chabad, but was in truth completely opposite. From that day on, the relationship between the Rebbe and Shlomo was changed. You can understand what happened. I'll give you a similar story. And these are stories from life. These are real stories. I've told you more than once, I know Reb Simcha Krauss very well. And he's one of the nicest people I know. Mamish, a mensch with empathy, which a rabbi needs.
But it's a fascinating story. He's a Chaim Berlin boy. People who knew him 60 years ago tell me, 55, 60 years ago, no one was a bigger chassid of Reb Yitzchak Kutner, the Chaim Berlin Rosh Yeshiva, than Reb Simcha Krauss. Reb Simcha learned in Chaim Berlin. He a drop younger than Reb Aaron Lichtenstein. Reb Simcha stood in awe of Reb Aaron because he knew Reb Aaron as a kid of 14, graduating high school and spending the next 2 years in the Chaim Berlin Beis Medrash, going through Shas al Haseda. And as I said many times, I don't know if Reb Aaron ever went to Shas al Haseda again, but he knew Shas by heart from what he did the ages of 14 to 16. So Reb Simcha, very close Talmud, and today you all know he identifies with Chovei Vetorah, he's involved in the National Base, and he certainly has moved very left compared to what he was. So you have to ask yourself, where was the straw that broke the camel's back, as Dalfin writes about Schleimler? And here's the story, and it's very similar to what Rabbi Dalfin writes here. Rabbi Krauss was rabbi in St. Louis. At some point, maybe early 60s, he decides it's time to organize a day school in St. Louis. It's very similar to the story with the Rav in the mid-30s in Boston. No, how many kids does he have to start a day school? It costs money. You're taking the kids out of public school. You're segregating them. All the stories and complaints and critiques they threw against the Rav, they're throwing against Reb Simcha in St. Louis. And the only way he could start, maybe he had a handful of students, it had to be mixed. There's no way he can start two separate schools with at least 10 students, 15 students. And money. Where do you get twice the amount of money? It's before so many right-wing Jews are multi-billionaires. Today it's a different story in America. What the right-wing world has financially. Lakewood is not in financial trouble. I believe YU is. I know it's 10 years since I saw the last raise teaching in Gross. All right, thank God. I have money for water and bread. I don't have to worry about YU's salary. But just think for a minute what I'm saying. We have one secretary room. We used to have three. I had to apologize to the world today for what goes on when Sherry's not here. They have to carry it because there's no one else to take charge. So Reb Simcha contacted his Rebbe, Rav Yitzchak Kutner, and Kutner told him, chas v'chalila, to have a mixed school. It's exactly like the Lubavitcher Rebbe talking to Schleimler. So Reb Simcha had to go ahead and organize the day school, but he went his way. He no longer had that intimate relationship with Reb Yitzchak Kutner. And this is Shlomo. He goes on, give me one more minute. Give me one more minute. Dr. Nathan, and don't think that Chaim Dalfin is the only one to say this. Dr. Natan Ophir in his book sums it up this way, and now we're quoting from Ophir. The book is called Rabbi Shlomo Kalbach, Life, Mission, and Legacy. It was published here in Israel. I think Geffen Press published it. It was a year ago. Despite his initial enthusiasm, Shlomo was becoming frustrated. He tried a job in a small synagogue in Harlem, New York. He taught in various yeshiva, but had problems keeping discipline. That's very interesting. Both Shlomo Kalbach and Meir Kahana taught in yeshiva high schools, and they had problems keeping discipline. Meir Kahana taught in the yeshiva of Central Queens, and I taught students who had Meir as a teacher. He felt inadequate in his care of mission. In 1955, he complained to the Rebbe that 90% of his audience would leave when he asked men and women to sit separately. And when he added that women couldn't sing, only one person remained. Quote, this is now Schleimler speaking. So instead of spending 2 hours with people who wanted to know something about Yiddishkeit, I wasted my time on one idiot. I can't do outreach this way. Now, let me come. What does he mean, one idiot? Do you understand what he's saying? These are people far from Yiddishkeit.
If the men, if you're going to separate men and women, who wants to stay? If the women can't sing, who wants to stay? All right, one idiot agreed and remains. That is a very strong statement. The Rebbe did not provide Shlomo with permission to allow women to sing with men. According to Shlomo, the Rebbe told him, quote, I cannot tell you to do it your way, but I can tell you not to do it your way. So if you want to do it on your own, God be with you. Shlomo would always recount sadly, I was homeless. I was not with Lubavitch. I was not in Lakewood. The years 1955 to 1959 were very difficult because I was really nowhere in this world. This is Shlomo's reconstruction of the exchange. And if you go to Ophir's book, you'll get all the sources from where he is quoting Shlomo the Kalmar. This fits in with my memory that I mentioned last week, that B'nai Akiva, and remember, B'nai Akiva was basically, the heart of B'nai Akiva was Brooklyn. And Brooklyn was always frimmer than the Bronx or Manhattan. And I remember that they asked the Chaim Berlin boys, the Torah Vadas boys, the Chaim Berlin boys asked Rabbi Huttner, Torah Vadas boys, maybe the ones who asked the Lubavitcher Rebbe. Boys and girls, B'nai Akiva, singing Zmirat, singing songs, Kumsitz, Oneg Shabbat, how else do you attract the youth? And both of them refused the Paskin. They couldn't say no, but they couldn't say yes. So here you see the same tshuva of the Rebbe Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg coming to life B'chol dar v'dar. And look what I quoted today. So far, one more. Take a look what we've touched upon. The Beit HaLevi, Rav Ruderman, Rav Baruch Ber Leibovich, Rav Chaim Yosef Zonnefeld, Rav Avraham Yitzchak Kohen Cook, Shlomo Le Kalbach. And this is a very good, solid understanding of what became of Shlomo. He appreciated Chabad, but he was not Chabad anymore. A Chabad shaluach can't go out the halachic mold. Shlomola became a law unto himself. And it had some success, but it also had a great amount of personal failure for Shlomo, that the world looked at him as sexually being off the map of Torah. And that's very sad. Could it have been avoided? All right. To rewrite history is very easy. To live it is much more difficult. Giddy, what do you want to say?
I was going to ask, going back to Shlomo, are we comparing Rav Shlomo to the whole Bay Torah crowd? Is Rebbe was making comparison between him and Rosimla Krauss?
No, I can't say that. In Reb Shlomo's lifetime, Chovei Torah was not on the map. Right. But I'm only making the analogy that with Simcha Krauss, people ask me, how did he move so left? And he told me this. I mean, he told me this story. And I understand it. Had the Rav started asking questions to in Boston in 1935, there would have never been a Maimonides. Where would we be today? What was the Imamans? Well, 35 or 37? Which year is it?
37.
37, that's what I thought I slipped. 37. He organized it in 37. How many students were? What were there? Five when it began? There were just a handful. And this is why Rabbi Revel, and this is what I'm told, that Rabbi Revel would not ask shailas of the Europeisha Rosh Yeshiva. He knew all the Gedolim he had. He was born and bred in Lithuania. In Kovna, a suburb of Kovna. His father was Prener Rav, and he spent his formative years in Kovna. And Rabbi Revel always felt the European Rosh Yeshiva will not understand the American scene. And there is truth to it, you understand? When you ask a Shaila, that's why I'm not happy with students who study in the Kollel and don't come to my classes. They have no time. have to pass the exam in Gemara and in Halacha. No, what I'm doing is a waste of time. It's different, but it's life for preparation to a certain degree. Then suddenly when they're out of the kollel, they're listening like kids in Australia who can't come to the kollel physically, it's too far. Suddenly they write me apology letters and they start asking me questions. How can I pasul? I don't know them. It's very hard to pasul for someone you don't know. Again, a din Torah, a suffix there, right, is not hard to pasul. But 90%, 95% of questions involved rabbinic shilas. It's a din de rabban, and there is subjectivity. And you have to know, Hepsid Maruba, covered Yom Shabbos, Yontav, etc., etc. Gentlemen, no one is to leave. We're going to dab Marv in 10 minutes. I just want to caution you, a chesed with the Rebbe and the elder students here, that we don't have to go out again tonight. It's very depressing, but God gives us the strength to study Torah. We have to go further. And my wife just told me on the phone that everyone is saying what I'm saying, the shows, the talkings, the callers. Where is the army? Where is the defense minister? How can it be that in one little round circle, day after day after day, people are being murdered in that round circle? Okay? Let's see what our leaders come up with. Gentlemen, Chabad is trying to record every moment of the seventh Rebbe's life. We'll talk about it in the Monday class, good, bad. And they now have every week, I believe it is, they run, here's my story. Something about a person that had a relationship eye to eye with the Rebbe. And this week, a virtual Talmud, who's a Chabadnik, sent me, they are observant. Mr. Tzvi Hirsch Tzatkis speaks, interviewed. Tells the story. He's a Jew from Moscow. He went to the Moscow Conservatory of Music to become a pianist. He was arrested twice while trying to attend the great Moscow Choral Synagogue, which was the only functioning synagogue, legal functioning synagogue in Moscow under the communist, on Akhapova Street. All of us who went to Russia for the Mossad know it well. And I was questioned, held in jail a few days each time, but I suffered no further fallout from these incidents. Then he writes what he did in Russia and how his parents tried their best to give him an education. And finally, he gets out of Russia, 1970, a Chabad Shaluach to Russia met him, and he pleaded with the Shaluach to ask the Rebbe to give him a bracha that he should get out, and less than a year later, he received his exit visa. Well, he came to the Rebbe, expressed his gratitude, and he was a musician in America. An interesting story here, which resembles the story I told you about my wearing a kippah in Yivo and how that lady yells at me, that kippah fencer. As I mentioned, I was educated as a musician in Russia, and there came a time when I was invited to give a concert in Manhattan in a very large hall. I don't remember the name. It was a concert of Jewish melodies for the Workmen's Circle, a secular Jewish organization. During the first intermission, someone approached me and asked me to take off my yarmulke. I refused to do this. And then during the second intermission, another person came over me. He said he was the vice president of the organization sponsoring the concert. And they, please, I'm not comfortable with my wearing a yarmulke. Would I please remove it? And I told them, you're the second person to bother me. If another person comes and is taking out my tzitzit, so that no one has any doubt that I am a Torah observant Jew. When I came to the Rebbe, I told him about this upsetting incident. As I was relating the story, I said, I was giving a concert to a Jewish audience that was not observant. When I said that, the Rebbe interrupted me. What do you mean they were not observant? They are observant. They just don't know that they are observant. See, that's the Rebbe, always seeing the good, like saying, you reach out and you bring them all the way. But of the many times that I saw the Rebbe, there's one story involving my daughter that stands out in my mind. I want to tell you in advance, gentlemen, this is a story like Chabad, like the Rebbe, like the seventh Rebbe would say, this is a story that it gives you a life example, how to act. Let me preface, I once brought my son to a Fabrengen, but I didn't bring my daughter. Right away the Rebbe asked, where is she? Where is Tanya? When my son heard the Rebbe asking for Tanya, he ran to make a call to my wife. She brought her right over. Tanya was just then a little girl. And when the Rebbe saw her, he waved to her. One time, the Rebbe was distributing wine. You know what that's called in Chabad? Kosher bracha. At the end of a festival, this was probably a Fabrengen after a Chag, like Matzai Sukkot, Matzai Pesach. And many of the yeshiva students were singing Hasidic songs. Standing on the stage not far from the Rebbe, I led a song. And Tanya, who was 7 or 8 years old at the time, began to sing along. When she did that, the Rebbe's secretary, Rusby Rablabel Grona, indicated to me she should stop singing, as the men present could not listen to the voice of a girl singing. The Rebbe noticed this and, concerned that she might be upset, put down his cup of wine, turned to her, and motivated to her to clap. He was encouraging her to participate, and he did this for some time. I was amazed that the Rebbe should consider the feelings of a child, and he should take so much time, so much trouble to engage her. It's a beautiful story. So let me summarize. Halacha l'maisa, very hard. Lahatir, a woman singing. I had the shaila. I had a student of Machon Gold who had an operatic voice. Believe me, with an operatic voice, if you're singing operas, as we spoke about last week and quoted Reb Menachem Breyer and the Rav, maybe it's a little bit easier, lahatir. But daiva chakima. But singing, on the other hand, this is the world in which we live. And perhaps we have to pick our battles. And this is an issue, yesham v'yismoch. Svatik polskim treikolo mishtai, Rav Chiel Yaakov Weinberg, yesham v'yismoch. But no matter which way you stand on the issue, always remember that little girl. And after Rav Leibel Groner ran over and told her not to sing, the Rebbe motioned to her, join in by clapping. It's a powerful message. All right, so this aspect of... Yes, what are you showing? What?
A video of it on YouTube.
There's a video of this on YouTube?
Yes.
So send me a link. I want to enjoy it too. And then
it's right now.
You can play it. 1 second, so bring it over here and play it right now.
I can't. After a share.
I can't believe it, but we got to document after this year. Send me a link. Let me enjoy it. I'll tell you, the computer is amazing. We should kiss the computer. It can create so much Torah here at Shemayim. There's bad on the computer, but life has good and bad. That's the bachata b'chayim. This is the way we have to live. This is why Torah mitzvah has a meaning. If we had no bad, what even Torah mitzvah? Well, come on, look at the Rambam in Hilchat Shuva. So what did we do today? We finished out the Kol Isha, the choir singing together. And it's an open question. To say Rabbi Nachshe Klein was matir, I don't, but I cannot say he ushered either. So, and you see, that's the Lubavitcher Rebbe, Rabbi Yitzchak Kutna, but there's a difference between Shlomo doing it under the aegis of Shlomo to Shlomo doing it under the aegis of Chabad. Gentlemen, I wouldn't miss tomorrow for all the rice that is now being consumed in China. Tomorrow we come back to the Rebbe, but a very, very important shir, a very deep shir, with interesting material. Now, Yitzchak. This is for you. It fills you in. I don't have good news. Barbara's back in the hospital and Sam is in the hospital. Please give this to Yitzchak. If anyone wants, this is the latest Midei Chodesh B'Chasho. If you're living in Israel, you're going to teach, you're going to be involved with youth, you have children you're raising. This, and it's edited by my dear student, Aryeh Weinberger. I'm very proud. I did a little good in my life. This is a kid from Brooklyn who's today like a native Israeli for years editing this volume. It's on all the happenings in Chodesh, Mar Cheshvan, and Kislev. This is the article, Hashem is with us, by Abraham Zuroff, about the Slonima story. Very fascinating. Anyone here who knew Rabbi Ruchin Derelik? Yitzchak, do you remember him?
Yes.
Here is a fabulous, take one for your father. Here is a fabulous photograph of Yeruchim Derelik, the youngster, kneeling on the ground, speaking with Rabbi Baruch Be'er Leibovich.
He's the one without the hat?
He's the one without the hat. There's Rabbi Baruch Be'er.
He's the one that never taught him why you
were born. Right. And he looks in his youth exactly as he looked in middle age and old age. If anyone else wants a picture, you're welcome to it.
Oh, yeah.
Who do we have for Chazan here? Herbie, you want to...
This is Chazan. Grace Miller from Malta.
Oh, thank you. Okay. Until we meet again in health and happiness, das v'daya. Herb, can you handle it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.